This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we welcome Steve Yates at the Heritage Foundation to comment on a headline in London, Guardian paper. Taiwan Vice President presses case at EU Parliament for joint efforts to counter China. China, angered by the address, goes the subhead, criticizing Europe for allowing, quote, separatist activities to be carried out in a parliament building. Steve, a very good day to you. Here's the puzzle. Is Europe reliable as an ally when it comes to defending the people of Taiwan and East Asia from the Chinese predator? The reason I ask is that it's been some time since I've seen Europe united in any fashion whatsoever about Ukraine. And I thought, why wouldn't they extend that to Taiwan? Why wouldn't they blame the United States for not leading? Why wouldn't they blame anyone but themselves for making a calculation that is not based on ideology, that's based on what's in it for me? So your measure of the European Union, have they been loud-voiced in the past about defending Taiwan, or have they always been muted? Good evening to you.
Well, thank you, John. The EU as a body has improved a modest amount in recent years in terms of what they would say, whether it was reports that they were putting out about challenges from China and Taiwan being characterized as one of those potential flashpoints that presents a challenge. But the EU and European countries generally have not had a heavy footprint in determining the balance of power in East Asia, and determining the deterrence equation for freedom of navigation in the high seas, or other kinds of imperatives for Indo-Pacific security. They have occasionally played roles, and that is welcome, but it has not been determinative in any way. You touch upon an area where it might explain the logic for why the sitting vice president of Taiwan was invited to come and address the parliament. On the one hand, that is a natural thing for a parliament to do. After all, this is a parliament that has given voice to Palestinian interests in the Middle East that are stateless. And if anyone wants to describe what Taiwan is, it's either a state of its own or it's stateless. It doesn't currently belong to the People's Republic of China, regardless of what Beijing says. But I think it's notable that they had Vice President Xiao come. I think that's a net move in the right direction. It doesn't mean material assistance that's going to make a difference on deterrence is on the next shipment out to East Asia, though.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, NATO ships do patrol East Asian waters. And so, in a sense, that's not the EU, of course, but there is congruence between those two organizations. Do you see NATO leading the way, perhaps, and the EU in following in the path, or are they just two separate organizations doing two separate things?
Well, NATO has been more forward-leaning in its reports that have assessed what the People's Republic of China threat is, the CCP malign influence threat is to Europe. Those NATO vessels do go through the region and help. It's still kind of a minority contribution, but from a faraway geography, as they would say, it's still more than nothing, and it is welcome. But I think it's been NATO that's leaned a little bit more in the balancing of power direction to support allies. And I think their dialogue with Japan has gotten a bit more honest, and that has moved NATO and thereby some of these European capitals. But I also think that there is a little bit of a Trump derangement syndrome argument, at least from my point of view, where there are voices in Washington that suggest that President Trump has not been clear about supporting Taiwan. They would say that President Biden was very, very clear. And so in some ways, the European political leadership or the establishment, their hatred, frankly, of everything that has to do with President Trump might be leading them to say, well, if he isn't going to openly receive these leaders, maybe we should. I would just posit that there's a little bit of that political opportunism that could go into why these visits now.
Steve, it occurs to me, if we drop the curtain and look back 150 years, Europe's interest in Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, has always been that of an owner, a colonial master. And once the Second War ended and their empires broke, eventually the French Empire broke as well, I'm not certain that I can think of an event where they cared very much, or at least spoke out in caring very much. Is that reputation still with them as colonial masters in Asia? Does that make China's road easier here to separate Europe from Taiwan?
Well, they certainly play that narrative. They'll talk about the unequal treaties period. They'll talk about the West generally on decline. A lot of people see that as primarily targeted at the United States, but it definitely is also targeted at Europe as well. And a lot of European leaders, when they come to East Asia, especially their visits to China, they're emphasizing economic opportunity. They're not emphasizing the need to maintain balance. They're not really emphasizing the need to maintain freedom of navigation on the high seas. And there's only one non-status quo actor in that across the Indo-Pacific right now. So I think it's been a work in progress, but it's definitely been a part of the political warfare of the People's Republic of China to suggest that Europe is on the decline even more so than America, population not being replaced, a significant change in demographics in each of these countries, and also a degradation of their projection of power.
Gordon, you have a question.
So let me give you a theory, Steve. There has been, in the last couple of months, an awareness around the world of China's role in the Russian war against Ukraine. Do you think that maybe the invitation to the Taiwan vice president to the European Parliament is sort of a defensive measure in that, or is that unrelated as well?
Well, I always look at things that maybe would consider a coincidence before strategy or three-dimensional chess or whatever the throwaway analogy is that we often have in our conversations about these things. For all I know, the invitation to Vice President Zhao was issued like 6 months ago. And I think that you're correct that there's something that has shifted in recent months that seems to be an added awareness, perhaps that Putin has put off the offers that President Trump has made to have a ceasefire and some kind of a positive sum relationship after that ceasefire. And I think that that chill has gone through Europe to a degree. But I also think that the China chill is just beginning with Europe, first by economics. But also, I think on some national security issues, there is an increasing awareness, but they still don't seem to have a strategy for what to do about it.
If it is a world of great powers, if the great powers are practicing spheres of influence, that makes logical sense for Europe to recognize that China owns Asia and none of our affair. Let's deal with them as trading partners here in the West. Here in the West, and not worry about their hygiene in East Asia. Does that make sense, Steve?
But certainly one of the logics that enters this debate, from my calculus, I would put the combined GDP of Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and maybe a few others as being strategically more significant and more reliable than the People's Republic of China, whose GDP I see as declining, whose demographics I see as declining, and their political activity as increasing risk. And so if you're looking at the artificial intelligence future, advanced manufacturing, there are pulls in both of these directions on that kind of debate, John. But I think that maybe, just maybe, we are starting to become aware that modern economies that are reliable, that are significant in size, like South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan combined, are more of the reliable ballast against these risks.
Point. Excellent counterpoint. Steve Yates of the Heritage Foundation. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.